You're listening to the Winsight Podcast Network.
Welcome to Menu Feed, a weekly podcast from Restaurant Business and Food Service Director. I'm Pat Kobe, Senior Editor covering menus and chefs for both brands. Joining me on the podcast is Iya Vang, chef and owner of Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. He emigrated here as a child from Southeast Asia with his family, and after pursuing other career paths, started a pop-up cooking Hmong cuisine, a blend of Thai, Laotian, Vietnamese, and Chinese influences. The pop-up evolved into a trailer and eventually a location in Gray's Food Hall in Minneapolis. Next up is a brick-and-mortar called Vinai, the first full-service restaurant in Minneapolis devoted to Hmong cuisine. Iya is a James Beard-nominated chef, host of Food Network's Stoked, and star of Feral on the Outdoors Channel. Listen as he talks about his mission to educate Americans about Hmong culture and its people through his cooking and his position as the leading voice of the food movement. Welcome, Iya. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Pat.
Let's begin by you telling me a little bit about your culinary journey and what motivated you to start Union Hmong Kitchen.
Yeah. So, you know, like I think that everybody, you know, that when we talk to, always think that I have this story of like, you know, standing by my mom and cooking with her and all these things. And like, it wasn't like that at all. You know, mom and dad both work. So, you know, everyone just took time in the kitchen. Everyone just helped out, you know, wherever they could. I never wanted really to be a cook because I was just felt like, you know, that was so, it's just so hard, like growing up cooking, you know, butchering animals, farming, like that's what we did. And it was just like, this is not what I want to do. But it's really funny, like when you're young, you always try to run away from who you are, but you only run in a circle to come back to who you really are. And so by the time I was, you know, full grown adult, went to college, went to school, not for culinary at all. I was interpersonal communication, a minor in PR marketing, you know, but the jobs that I had growing up was in kitchens. So I learned a lot about just kind of hard work, self-sustaining, how do we do this? From kitchens. And it's kind of like what I tell people. It's like that for me, it was like that girl that I keep like breaking up with, but I somehow always end up with back every summer.
That's and we've been doing it.
Yeah, it is. And then like 15 years into it, you're like, man, I might as well put a ring on it because I think we're kind of like a thing now, huh? On and off. And, you know, every time I say that, I see people kind of staring at each other and I'm like, and that could be you right now, you know? And that's how it was. I think for me, the biggest aha moment was when I started realizing that food wasn't just, you know, like a job or like making sustenance, but food is actually a story we use to speak to each other, to talk to each other. And then how do we use that story to actually kind of see each other's humanities? And so one of the language we use within our restaurant is every dish has a narrative. You follow that narrative long enough and close enough, you get to the people behind the food. And once you're there, it's actually not about food. It's about people. Mm. The food is a catalyst into cultivating great relationships. And so for me, I did that. I followed the story, the narrative of the foods that I loved and enjoyed, and ended up at the table with my mom and dad. And I heard their story. And then when I listened to their story and when I was quiet enough, patient enough, humble enough to listen to the full story of who they are, where they came from, the struggles they went through to get me here to this country, to bring us here, to live a life solely for us, I cannot not talk about them. And yeah. So that is kind of the antithesis. That is the everything of what we do here, you know, and Union Hmong Kitchen kind of birthed out of that. And it was, now how do we keep telling mom and dad's story? How do we keep keep moving forward, telling their story? And also it's the Hmong story of our people. And so, yeah, that's how it started.
How old were you when you came to the U.S.?
I was like four and a half, like five, like I think it was like four or five. Mm-hmm. I started kindergarten right away. I remember, you know, the first day of school, not speaking English, you know, going to school and everything. Yeah.
Wow. And do you have brothers and sisters too that
Yeah, there's a there's seven of us total. Yeah, so yeah,
big
there's a
family?
bunch of us. My parents have 21 grandkids, so they love it. They
No, that's great. Well, I'm really fascinated as to how the Hmong people ended up in Minnesota, because it's quite a different kind of climate than you were originally from. And to me, because I don't think a lot of people know much about the Hmong people. So I think it's great that you're introducing the culture through your restaurant and through your TV shows and other things that you're doing. But tell me how how this community grew in Minnesota.
Yeah, so back in the late 50s, there's conflict in Southeast Asia, and then eventually during the Vietnam War, which every time we talk about the Vietnam War, a lot of people know the Vietnam War kind of in southern Vietnam, but like in northern Laos, there was a huge conflict during that same time, where the U.S. government, the U.S. was afraid that China's communist rule will come through, take over Laos, and once it takes Laos, Laos becomes the linchpin to Southeast Asia, and then all of Southeast Asia will fall. So they sent in military advisors, CIA slash special forces troops that went in to train these mountain people, and they were the Hmong people. And the Hmong people became a paramilitary troop slash proxy army to fight for the Americans, for American interest in the mountains of Laos, protecting that part. And so there was this conflict, there's a big war there. It was called a secret war. Nobody really knew about it. It was the CIA's little quote unquote secret war up there. And my father at age 12 joined up with the military troops up there from the Hmong villages, and they called themselves the Special Guerrilla Unit, SGU. And what they did was their job was to help rescue down American pilots who would bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which that trail would be the supply line for ammunitions and weapons that were coming through to support the Viet Congs during the Vietnam War. And so my dad, at age 12, with his brother and his father, they joined and became basically mercenaries to fight for the U.S. Interests. And there was a handshake deal that was made that said no matter what happens, the Hmong people had free citizenship to America. And what happened there was when the U.S. pulled out in 75, all our people were left behind. At that time, there was about 300,000 Hmong people in the mountains of Laos at that time, and about 65,000 was genocide because the Northern Communist Party came through and killed any Hmong people who helped the U.S. family, children. I mean, we're hearing about it now.
Yeah, it's really a
Currently,
story that wasn't told at all.
it's exactly what happens around the country. It happened in Afghanistan. It happened in, Syria. It's happening in Ukraine. It's happening right now in Israel with, Palestine, Hamas, all of that. History repeats itself.
Yeah,
And what happened
unfortunately.
was then there was an escape, and the escape was from my mom, my dad. At that point, they didn't know each other, but they escaped Laos months, and even years in the jungles, hiding and hiding until they were able to escape to Thailand. And the Thai government didn't want them, so there's these refugee camps that were built on the border of Thailand and Laos, in northern Laos, northern Thailand there. And there was a refugee camp called Vinai from 75 to 92, hosted 90,000 refugees from the war. And out of those 90,000, I think 90% of them were Hmong, and out of those 90%, majority ended up here in the Midwest, in the Twin Cities area here, up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Here has the highest densest popul most dense population of Hmong people within the metro here in the United States. There's about 75,000 Hmong people here in the metro area,
Wow,
and
what an
so it
interesting
was.
story. Yeah, I mean, I never knew about it, and I grew up in the U.S. public schools and learned history, but we never heard that story.
Yeah, it's something that I think most people don't talk about most, but I think that there's a little bit of that changing, and
Yeah,
so
I hope
yeah,
so.
my parents met in Vinai in 77. They got married in 78. I was born in 84, and we came to this country in 88.
Well, I'm glad you're here, because now we could talk about how you're, spreading the story or telling the story through Hmong food and through your restaurant, Union Hmong Kitchen. So tell me about some of the items that you have on the menu and how you work with some of the farmers in the area to source ingredients.
Yeah, so when we say farmers in the area, it's actually my mom,
oh, okay,
my dad. Yeah, you know, we do some other farmers, but mom and dad has this little garden. She calls it a little garden. It's 10 acres, so it's more of a farm.
Wow.
And all the produce and product that she gets from it, that she harvests, you know, that she harvests out, comes out to the restaurant. And so we use that in the restaurant during the harvest seasons, during fermenting and pickling time. We use all whatever we can for it. And so it's just an incredible, incredible time that we get to use all of this product that comes out that mom and dad grows for us. And, you know, that's just kind of what they always done. I think dishes wise, if you come to our restaurant, you're going to see four main items on the menu. You're going to see a rice dish. You're going to see rice. You see a protein, you see some kind of vegetable and some kind of hot sauce. And when you go to a Hmong house, like those are the things that are always very common on the table, and whatever items they are, they kind of get the ability to change, but you will always have that.
So what type of service is it? Is it like fast casual and people do?
Yeah, what we have right now with Union Hmong Kitchen is fast casual, you know, and then we do a lot of events. We do a lot of catering. We have little shops in the sports stadiums here, you know, the Twins, the Vikings. And then we do the Minnesota State Fair, which is one of the biggest events of the year. You know, like this past State Fair in 12 days, there was 1.8 million people that came through the fair. So, yeah.
I actually did a story on that. So it's fascinating as well. But
yeah, it's crazy. You know, like we talk about State Fair and friends from other states, like, oh, that's cute. We have a county fair. I'm like, no, bro. It's not like a county fair. Yeah. It's like, no, this is a lifestyle here.
Right. So what are some of the things, I mean, it's probably harvest time or, you know, I'm sure your parents are picking a lot of, you know, produce from their garden right now. So what are some of the items that are that you're pickling and preserving and using?
Yes. So a lot of Hmong mustard greens. So Hmong mustard green is what we ferment. It's a very traditional. So a lot of that Hmong mustard green is like a cross between a spinach and arugula. That's the taste of it. Big green leaves. What else? Yeah. And then, you know, squash, a lot of, you know, a lot of peppers, a lot of chilies that mom grows for us to use in the, you know, to use in the restaurant. So, yeah. So pretty much all that. And, you know, and then whatever we want, you know. So sometimes it's, you know, lemongrass, she has some ginger, you know, stuff like that.
So is it like very spicy cuisine or is it a little more subtle than some of the spicier ones?
Yeah, I mean, we get asked that question all the time. And, you know, I say that it's enough spice that, you know, we have to understand why the spice is there, you know, and there sometimes some of the produce that we get, it doesn't have much of, you know, kind of that next step layer. But I mean, that's what being a good cook is about, right? Like, you know, I just tell all our chefs, like, we're not about just burning people's mouth. And I think that that's the biggest misconception of Hmong food, Southeast Asian food. Like, oh, is this spicy? I mean, the question that people always ask is this spicy? You know, the thing I want to say back is, do you not like flavor? You know, and that's the truth. The truth is, like, you have to understand why the heat is there. You know, nobody ever goes, oh, is this bland? Nobody ever asked that question about, you know, So that's like one of the things where I have to tell people, you have to understand why the heat is there. Like, what's the purpose of that heat? Sometimes that heat was made for preservation. Sometimes the heat was used. So because all you had was, you know, chilies and salt and maybe a little fish sauce. That's it. But it's very important to understand the ingredients before, you know, before we, you know, I think there are a lot of people that just come in and will say, well, I don't know, I don't like heat, so I'm not gonna like this food. And I'm like, well, that's very close-minded, you know. nobody ever goes in and goes, you know, like, it would just be as silly as if I go into a place and go, I don't like bland foods, I'm not gonna eat here. It's pretty silly, you know.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that the spice, you know, level changes for people. And I tell people, I'm not the person to ask. Please don't ask me, because, you know, because I grew up with this. So my level of where heat is not yours. So if I say it's not spicy and you say it's spicy, like, you're going to be mad at me, because I'm like, I'm not the one to ask. I grew up, I'm almost 40 years old. Like, this is what I grew up eating. So, you know, and I always tell people that the sauce, the hot sauce always comes on the side, so it can always be added in. So for those who just grab it and dump it in there, I'm like, well, that's kind of your fault. Like, that's a you problem, not a us problem. You know, that's why there's a little bit. And that's why the rice is there. The rice is there so you can eat it, and the rice helps, you know, kind of chill everything out.
And then the proteins are, do you use seafood and chicken and?
Any kind of protein. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go anywhere from seafood to, you know, up here in, you know, up here in Minnesota, we have great pork products. You know, we work with a lot of really cool beef farmers, you know, but yeah, anywhere from that, you know, even tapping into goat and lamb a little bit. And that's like super fun to do. Yeah.
Sounds yummy. So you're also planning to open your first brick and mortar restaurant. Union Mong Kitchen is in a food hall right now. And
yeah, we have. So, you know, I think that that's kind of a misconception everyone always throws out at us. But, you know, Union Mong Kitchen itself is, you know, it one of them is in a food hall, and we have a second location, which is, you know, in its own building. And so we have two locations there, two in the sports arena. So we always say Union Mong Kitchen is one restaurant, many locations, you know,
right.
But it's a fast casual. Like, you know, let's just be very honest. It's you come in, you grab, you know, grab your food, you get a number, you sit down, the food comes out to you, and it's an introduction to Hmong food, as we, you know, tell people. You know, our next project that we have coming up is it's a standalone building, you know, and we're looking at a full service restaurant, you know, everything from food to drinks to service to, you know, even, you know, having a good bar program, having a, what does it look like to have a dessert program, all these things, you know, and understanding of saying, how do we take this and then use this as a translation of our culture and our food. And I tell people Vinai, which is named after the refugee camp I was born in and my parents met in, and where, you know, it's very important to our people. I tell people that Vinai is a love letter to my mom and dad. It is the culmination of their life expressed through this restaurant. So everything that we do there, it reflects them as you know, as people, as humans, and it reflects them as my parents to us.
And that'll be in Minneapolis as well?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. A little neighborhood area called Northeast. Yep.
And I read somewhere that you're going to put like a smoker in outside.
Yeah. Oh. No, it's inside. We, you know, wood fire grilling is, you know, it's not a sexy trend thing for Hmong food, but what it is it's just the way we always did food. Mm. Like starting a fire and grilling meats over fire. That's what we did. That's what my father did. That's what his father did. That's what their fathers did in the mountains of Laos. You know, is grilling meats over fire. And that's right. What they did. And that's what I want to do. I want the moment people walk in that smoke in that place, that wood fire smoke hits them and they go, oh yeah, this is home to us.
Your parents must be so proud of you doing all, you know, these restaurants, and you also have some TV shows. So let's talk about that a bit. You launched Feral on the Outdoors channel this year. So yep. You've been really, really busy this past year. Tell me about mm-hmm. that show.
Yeah, Feral is a really fun show. You know, we get to travel the country and we hunt. I go out with the guide into, you know, some body of water, some jungle, some woods, somewhere, you know, in the Everglades, all the way to, you know, by the Grand Tetons. We're everywhere. And what we do is we hunt for animals that are invasive, animals that are destructive to their ecosystem, or just animals that most people won't eat, you know? And so we go out there, we hunt them, we catch them, we hunt them down, we harvest them, and then we cook it right over a wood fire grill.
So what are some of the more unusual animals that you've cooked?
In season one, I think we had iguanas, we had Burmese python, lionfish. You know, in season two we have diver ducks, so those are ducks that are mostly on water, so it has kind of a quote-unquote fishy taste to it, and most people won't eat. You know, we do squirrels, we do Asian flying carps, we net them, stuff like that. Yeah, so that's all over the board, and it's super fun. But this what I really, really love about the show is the fact that this show reflects the Hmong people, like Hmong people that lived in the mountains of Laos, Hmong people that would just go out and whatever nature provided for them, whatever they could find in the jungle, they would hunt it down, they would harvest it, and they would bring it home, and they would, you know, find a way to cook it and grill it and, you know, steam it, whatever. And this is something that they did, which was which is like amazing. But I get to do that on a grander scale, to, and then some of the dishes we do really reflects just some of the dishes that my, like for example, the way that we did the iguana was exactly the way my father taught me or told me how they did iguana when he was a little boy growing up in the mountains of Laos. You know,
Wow.
so it was incredible.
That sounds really unique for sure. Then you've also competed on the Iron Chef show series, I guess it is now. It's what did you do on Iron Chef? Did you make anything Hmong-ish, or did you like tap into your culture or into your background to cook on Iron Chef?
Yeah, absolutely. We were very blessed to be on the Iron Chef on Netflix, and and to be on that first season that Netflix is doing. You know, it aired a year or so ago, and we were very, very blessed to be a part of it. And then we got, you know, the secret ingredient was chilies, and the person I battled against, we battled against, was Gabriela Camara. She was just amazing, amazing, amazing chef. I didn't feel worthy to be in her presence. But it was super fun, and we got a chance to showcase all Hmong food that were that is a reflection of the chilies that we got to use.
That is really cool. And then what is Stoked about? I haven't heard about Stoked, but that's on the Food Network.
It's a Food Network digital series called Stoked, and it's all about wood fire grilling. And it's so fun. And so doing these different dishes that my mom and my dad taught me, and especially my dad taught me over the wood fire grill, because that's kind of where I learned how to cook as a kid growing up. That's what it is. It's all about wood fire grilling. It's about the techniques of cooking over live fire. It's super fun. And then we get to work with this really fun grill called the Kudu Grill. It's a brand called Kudu, and it's a really, really fun grill that you can take anywhere with you.
Do any of your brothers or sisters cook also professionally? I mean, I
No, none of my siblings cook professionally. I mean, they're they're house cooks, dads and moms, who just cook for their kids and stuff like that. But no, none of them. They're smarter. They went and got postgraduate degrees, and they have great jobs and nice, beautiful families. So
Well, you have a great job too. It sounds like a lot of fun.
yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
So tell me about your podcast and how you're introducing, Americans to the Hmong culture, because I think it's one of the cultures that we know least about in this country.
Yeah, so the podcast is called Hmonglish. So it's the idea of Hmong and English together. Growing up, we would speak to our parents, but we would speak to them in Hmong, but then there would be English words that don't translate over to Hmong. So we would end up creating our own language called Hmonglish. It's kind of a joke between us kids. And eventually I just said, you know what? There's this collision of these two beautiful cultures. You have your Western American culture and you have your Hmong culture, and there's this beautiful collision. Instead of like bumping heads, how about we connect? And so it came out of this idea where there are a lot of young Hmong kids who are trying to figure out who they are as Hmong, as Hmong kids growing up in America, or as Hmong kids were born in America, and say, how do we navigate both cultures? And so that's what the podcast is really about. And we invite people, that Hmong people in our community, who are doing some amazing things, and we invite them in. It's super fun, and we get to talk about, it's kind of like, it's like a meeting of a bunch of young Hmong kids, and then everybody gets to listen in on it, you know?
So this is like the second generation here that, maybe
Yeah,
or third
definitely. But
generation.
Second, first generation, and second, maybe even second generation. But I myself, my kids, I don't have any kids, but one day my kids will be first generation, because I wasn't born here. But I think that what's really great is the ability of what they're doing. What we're doing is we're connecting these, because there's these different, now there are different spaces, there are different things, different topics, and different issues that the Hmong community itself, our elders, can't answer, or they struggle answering. And instead of saying, oh, well, you guys just don't understand, what we get to say to them is say, hey, like, there is these beautiful cultures that come together. So it's like the idea of a third culture. We're all third culture kids, that's a sociology thing. If you search into what third culture is, it's exactly what's happening here.
Cool. Well, your accomplishments so far certainly support the recognition you've gotten, like from the James Beard Foundation. You've been nominated several times, and other prominent culinary organizations talk say that you're the leading Hmong chef in the U.S. So what's next?
I don't know. I might take a nap.
I'm breathless. Things you've done. But
nah, I think that we have some really fun things in the hopper coming up. 2024 is pretty good, gonna be pretty big for us. But every year that we are doing this, every year we're learning a little more. And so that's what we're really, really excited about.
And do you have partners that you're working with on your next restaurant?
A couple partners. I have a couple partners. But they're more like the silent partner, which they're really sweet about it. They're like, hey man, we just want to be behind you, but like, we don't need to be anywhere near this. So yeah, just,
right. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Really, really great. Mm-hmm. Really, really great people.
Great. Well, I'll look forward to hearing about when the opening next year, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Ia. I hope our listeners learned as much about Hmong culture as I did during this conversation. You can download this episode of Menu Feed and past podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Pat Kobe.